A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
I don't try in every episode to mention having ADHD, but I am on a kick at the moment to really, I guess, tackle all these areas of my life from a non-pharmacological standpoint. Because, you know, there's a common thing, people who take SSRI meds, you're encouraged to use the period when you're on the medication to do the often the best and most important work in therapy. And I feel like for ADHD, I'm kind of embracing that same approach, that if you if you're on something, you're taking some medication that keeps you reliably focused, strong, you know, focused basically, then that's a great time to actually do the organization work that might just have seemed very overwhelming when you were on your baseline state. And that's kind of what I'm belatedly getting around to at the moment. So, you know, 10 months ago, my wife and I had Ezra, our son, but we're both parenting without any parental support because both of our parents, I just have a mother alive, but Hannah's parents and my mom both live outside of Israel. So they're in different countries, and because of the war, just to add to the complications, we haven't had them over yet. So we're basically, the two of us are kind of on our own, and we just started using shared child support last week. Shared daycare. And I think what's happened is that, you know, it takes a while to adjust to having a child or having a son. And I feel like the thing with ADHD is that as life gets harder, as your obligations stack up, become, you know, more challenging, keeping going without having solid skills just becomes harder and harder until one day stuff starts to suffer. And I feel like lately that's been my self-care. Yesterday, for example, I had a very unappetizing dinner of two slices of cheese on some dubiously fresh bread because I forgot to do the shopping. And if you ask me really why didn't you do the shopping, I'd say there just was not enough time yesterday to go shopping. Hannah was tied up. So suddenly we're in this kind of situation a lot these days where we both feel there's just too much. We're both working our tails off to take care of Ezra, to get ready for a move. We've had some crises with the apartment and we're just kind of putting out fires. And as a new parent, Ezra's health and welfare comes first, but we have to take care of ourselves. What I'd like to get your take on, Herman and Corn, in this episode is if you look at kind of things like yesterday that were preventable, I could point to what would have prevented that, which is you have maybe a weekly shop scheduled, could be home delivery, and you have a few essentials, pantry essentials in stock, and maybe you also have a little backup ration of protein bars or whatever, just in case you really don't have any food and you're at that point where you're too tired to do any kind of cooking whatsoever. But if you think about, I guess, what's required to be a functional human and a functional parent, you could break it down to chores around the house, laundry tasks, your child's, your parenting responsibilities. And I guess that's where I find if one area is falling behind, that's what I start thinking about. And I find it hard to kind of keep everything in view at the same time. What I was thinking about, and this is something we discussed in the episodes about the Iran-Israel war, was this concept I mentioned that I found it very helpful to have two standard operating procedures checklists printed on the door. One for how to stay prepared, because we were going back and forth to the bomb shelters all the time. And that was just like simple things like, have your go bag by the door, is your phone on, is your phone off silent? And when we were exhausted and running short on sleep, those two A4 pages served as just these kind of anchors, like, yes, okay, I'm good, so I can stop thinking about it now. And I keep thinking that I'd love to have something like that for everything. my productivity tools over the years, I've used things like Google Calendar, Todoist, and I'm actually not convinced that they make this any easier. You end up just cataloging, and I was a big fan of getting things done, GTD, the main principle being make sure everything gets captured into a system. Great, I've got Todoist. Great, I've got voice capture. But suddenly you've got just this swarm of to-dos and calendars. So here's my question for you, Herman and Corin. If you were to draft a user manual for my life right now, encompassing everything like the chore stuff around the house, the things I need to do to keep my business on track, filing taxes, tax returns, making sure invoices go out, making sure they get paid, Ezra responsibilities, dinner time, make sure he's up at this time, going through it area by area, block by block. And based upon what Herman Poppleberry, the all-knowing oracle, has gleaned about productivity systems, and particularly how folks with ADHD or different forms of neurodiversity, where we get stuck, which I think for me is overwhelm when everything is there all at once. If you wanted to give us something that we could put in our back pocket, literally or physically, on an app or on a paper or both, doesn't really matter in the way I'm thinking about it. Give us a source of truth for keeping our life running. What would you put in there? What format would you recommend putting it in? And based upon, again, what we know about how the human brain works and how recall works, how would you recommend we actually use this source of truth? For those of us who might, like me, find complicated things sometimes quite easy, but struggle with those daily things that it takes to be a functional and effective human. Herman and Corin, over to you.
Daniel sent us this one, a long one, and honestly, it's the kind of prompt that could be its own manual. He's been on this kick lately, tackling life systems from a non-pharmacological angle. The core idea is something you hear a lot with SSRI. Meds, use the window where the medication is doing its job to build the therapy skills that outlast the prescription. He's applying that same logic to ADHD. If you're on something that gives you reliable focus, that's the moment to build the organizational scaffolding that felt impossible before.
The scaffolding he needs right now is intense. 10 months ago, he and Hannah had Ezra, their son, and they're parenting completely solo. Both sets of grandparents are outside Israel. The war's made visits impossible so far, and they just started shared daycare last week. So they're in that raw, no-backup phase of new parenthood.
He gave us a snapshot of where things are cracking. Yesterday, he ate 2 slices of cheese on dubiously fresh bread because he forgot to shop. His read on it isn't I was lazy. It's that when life gets harder and obligations stack up, the stuff that was barely held together by improvisation starts to fall apart. For him lately, that's been self-care.
He's asking us for something really specific, not general productivity advice. He wants a user manual for his life right now, a source of truth that covers everything, chores, business tasks, taxes, invoices, Ezra's schedule, dinner, wake-up times. Something he and Hannah can literally put in their back pocket, paper, or app that works for brains that find complicated things easy but struggle with the daily stuff it takes to be a functional human.
He mentioned those 2 A4 checklists they had taped to the door during the Iran-Israel war. 1 for staying prepared when they were running back and forth to bomb shelters. Go bag by the door. Phone charged. Phone off silent. When they were exhausted and sleep-deprived, those 2 pages were anchors. He wants that same thing, but for everything.
By the way, today's script is coming from DeepSeek V4 Pro. Feels appropriate for a topic about precision and discipline.
I'll take it. All right, let's dive in.
The first thing I want to name, and I think this is the frame Daniel's already operating in, is that what he's describing isn't a motivation problem. It's an executive function load problem. He's got a newborn, he's running a business, they're preparing for a move, they're handling apartment crises. That's not a situation where you just need to try harder, that's a situation where your working memory is completely saturated.
And the cheese on bread dinner. He's not saying he didn't know he needed groceries. He's saying the system for making sure groceries happened wasn't resilient enough to survive a day where both parents were maxed out. The question is, what kind of system survives that?
Let's talk about what actually works and what doesn't, especially for ADHD brains. Daniel mentioned getting things done, GTD, the David Allen method. He said he's tried it, and the result is a swarm of to-dos and calendars that becomes its own source of overwhelm.
which is the classic GTD failure mode for ADH. The system is designed to get everything out of your head, which is good, but then it presents you with a list of 200 next actions, and for someone with executive function challenges, that list is paralyzing. You haven't reduced the cognitive load, you've just moved it to a different medium.
Russell Barkley, one of the leading ADHD researchers, argues that the core deficit in ADHD isn't attention, it's performance, the gap between knowing what to do and actually doing it. A to-do list helps with the knowing part, but does nothing for the doing part. For someone with ADHD, seeing 47 items on a list doesn't create motivation, it creates shutdown.
If GTD and standard to-do apps aren't the answer, what does a system look like that actually bridges that knowing-doing gap?
I think we need to start with a principle that's counterintuitive for productivity nerds, but essential for ADH. HD brains, you don't want a system that shows you everything. You want a system that shows you only what's relevant right now, in this context, at this moment. The overwhelm Daniel's describing, I find it hard to keep everything in view at once. The solution isn't to get better at keeping everything in view, it's to stop trying to keep everything in view.
Instead of one master list, you want something more like a series of lenses. When you're in the kitchen at 6 p.m, you see the kitchen at 6 p.m. lens. When you're at your desk on a Tuesday morning, you see the desk Tuesday morning lens.
And this connects to something Daniel already knows works, those bomb shelter checklists. Those worked because they were context-specific, short, and physically present where he needed them. He didn't have to remember to check an app. The checklist was on the door he was walking past. The trigger was environmental.
Let's build from that. If the bomb shelter checklist model worked, what's the equivalent for daily life? You don't create one checklist. You create maybe 5 or 6, each tied to a specific context, each short enough that it doesn't trigger overwhelm.
The magic number for an ADHD. HD-friendly checklist is between 3 and 7 items. Working memory capacity for most adults is about 4 chunks of information. For someone with ADHD, that working memory is even more constrained under stress. If your morning routine checklist has 23 items, you've already lost.
All right, let's get concrete. Daniel asked us to draft a user manual. Area by area, block by block. What are the domains we need to cover?
I'd break it into 6 domains. 1, morning routine and Ezra launch. 2, work operations, invoices, taxes, client work. 3, household maintenance, groceries, laundry, cleaning. 4, evening routine, dinner, Ezra wind down, bedtime. 5, personal self-care, the thing Daniel said is currently suffering. And 6, the weekly reset, a dedicated time to review and restock all the other systems.
That's a good breakdown. And the key insight for each domain is that the checklist shouldn't be a list of tasks. It should be a list of triggers. A task says, do laundry. A trigger says, when you walk past the laundry basket and it's full, start a load. One requires you to remember to check. The other is activated by the environment.
That's backed up by what we know about prospective memory. The ability to remember to do something in the future, which is one of the most impaired cognitive functions in ADHD. Time-based prospective memory. Remember to do X at 3 p.m. is especially bad. But event-based prospective memory, when Y happens, do X, is much more reliable. So designing triggers around events rather than times is a real adaptation.
For the morning routine, instead of 7:30, wake Ezra. You'd have, when your alarm goes off, go to Ezra's room. The alarm is the event trigger, not the clock.
And then you chain them. Alarm goes off, you're in Ezra's room. You pick them up, you're in the kitchen, the breakfast checklist is on the fridge. Each step triggers the next. This is called a routine chain, and it's one of the most effective strategies for ADH. HD because it reduces the number of decisions you have to make.
Decision fatigue is the other piece here. When you're exhausted, every decision costs more. A checklist that removes decisions, not just reminds you of them, is worth 10 times more than a to-do list.
Let's talk format. Daniel said paper or app, doesn't matter. For years, the productivity world has been pushing digital. Todoist, Notion, Obsidian. And for certain things, digital is great. But for context-specific, environment-triggered checklists, paper has real advantages.
I lean digital for most things. Make your case.
First, paper is spatially stable. Your brain encodes information partly by where it is in physical space. A checklist on the fridge is in the same place every time. That spatial consistency aids recall. An app requires you to navigate to it, and the screen looks different depending on what else is open. Second, paper doesn't have notifications, but it also doesn't have distractions. You open your phone to check a checklist, and there's a WhatsApp message, an email, a news alert. For an ADHD brain, that's a trap. Third, paper is always on. It doesn't need charging, it doesn't crash, it doesn't require an update. It's just there.
Those are solid points. But paper isn't searchable, isn't editable without a pen, and you can't set reminders on it.
So the right answer is a hybrid. Paper for the daily context-specific checklists, the things you need to see in the moment, in the physical space where the action happens. Digital for things that need to be captured, stored, and retrieved on a longer time horizon. Tax documents, client contracts, medical records.
Paper checklists in the kitchen, by the door, in the bathroom, maybe one on the desk, and a digital system for the archive and the calendar.
And for the digital side, I want to recommend something specific, a plain text file. Not an app, not a platform, just a single markdown file, or a small set of them that serves as the canonical source of truth.
Why plain text over something like Notion or Todoist?
Plain text is future-proof. You can open it on any device, any operating system, forever. It's fast, no loading screens, no sync delays, it's distraction-free. And critically, for ADHD, it's infinitely flexible. You're not fighting the app's opinion about how you should organize things. You can structure it exactly the way your brain works.
That last point is underrated. Most productivity apps have an opinion. GTD apps want you to do GTD. Kanban apps want you to do Kanban. If your brain doesn't work that way, you spend more energy adapting to the tool than the tool saves you. And for someone like Daniel, an open source developer, a plain text file is probably the most natural thing in the world. He can version control it with Git. Zero learning curve.
All right, so we've got a format recommendation, paper checklist for daily context-specific stuff, a plain text file for the master reference. Now let's actually build the content.
Let's go domain by domain. And I want to structure each domain the same way. First, the non-negotiable minimum, the 3 to 5 things that absolutely must happen. Second, the triggers, what in the environment prompts each action. Third, the failure modes, what typically goes wrong and how to recover.
Non-negotiable minimum, Ezra is fed, dressed, and delivered to daycare. Everything else is bonus. The triggers, alarm 1, is the wake-up trigger. Walking into Ezra's room triggers the diaper and clothes sequence. Walking into the kitchen triggers the breakfast sequence, and the breakfast checklist is literally taped to the cabinet above where the breakfast food lives. The checklist says, bottle or solids depending on age, bib, wipes within reach, check the daycare bag is packed.
The daycare bag itself should have a checklist taped to it. Spare clothes, diapers, wipes, whatever the daycare requires. You check it the night before as part of the evening routine, not in the morning when you're rushed.
Anything that can be done the night before, do it the night before. The morning checklist should be as short as humanly possible. If it has more than 5 items, you've got things on there that belong in the evening.
The evening routine needs to include prep for the next morning. What's that look like?
Evening is 2 subdomains. There's the Ezra wind down, dinner, bath, bedtime routine, story, lights out, and then there's the adult reset, where the prep for tomorrow happens. Non-negotiable for Ezra, dinner happens, some form of hygiene happens, he's in bed at roughly the same time every night. Non-negotiable for the adult reset, daycare bag is packed, tomorrow's breakfast is staged, a quick scan of the kitchen, and, this is the one Daniel specifically needs, a 2-minute check on tomorrow's meals. Do we have something for dinner? Do I need to defrost something? Is a grocery run needed?
The meal check is what would have prevented the cheese on bread situation. It takes 2 minutes the night before. If you try to figure it out at 6 p.m. when everyone's hungry and tired, it takes 30 minutes and you end up eating cheese on questionable bread.
Now, household maintenance. This is the one that tends to sprawl because it includes groceries, laundry, cleaning, apartment repairs, bills. It's the domain most likely to generate the swarm, Daniel talked about.
We need to be ruthless about what goes in the daily and weekly checklist versus what goes in the master reference. The daily household checklist is maybe 3 items. Dishes done or at least contained, trash taken out if full, and a quick floor scan for hazards now that Ezra's crawling. Daniel mentioned he's been doing that with a headlamp, which is honestly a great image.
The weekly household checklist is where groceries and laundry live. I'd recommend a fixed day and time for each. Saturday morning, groceries. Sunday afternoon, laundry. The specific day doesn't matter, but the fixity matters enormously. If it's, I'll do groceries when we run out of things, you're always reacting. If it's, Saturday morning is grocery time, period, it becomes a rhythm, not a decision.
For ADHD brains, removing the decision is the whole game. Every decision you remove is cognitive bandwidth you get back.
Now, the meal planning that feeds into that grocery run. That's where a simple reference document helps. A list of 5 to 7 meals that you know how to make, that everyone will eat, that use mostly pantry staples. When you're planning the week's meals, you pick from that list. You're not inventing new dinners every week. You're rotating through a known set.
That sounds boring until you're a sleep-deprived parent, at which point it sounds like salvation. What about the business domain? Daniel's self-employed. He's got invoices, taxes, client work.
Business is tricky because it's the domain where GTD-style capture actually is useful. You do need to track commitments, deadlines, and ideas. But the overwhelm problem is the same. The solution is to separate the business domain into 2 layers, the operational layer and the strategic layer. The operational layer is the stuff that must happen on a schedule. Invoices go out, taxes get filed, client deliverables get shipped. That layer should be handled by a small set of recurring checklists, same as household. The strategic layer, project planning, business development, creative work, that's where you use a more flexible system.
The operational layer is where most ADHD freelancers get into trouble. Invoices don't go out because there's no trigger. Taxes don't get filed because the deadline feels abstract until it's urgent. The fixes to make the operational stuff as automatic and trigger-based as the household stuff.
I'd recommend a weekly business admin block, maybe 2 hours on a Monday morning or Friday afternoon. During that block, you run through a checklist, send outstanding invoices, log expenses, check bank balances, review the coming week's deadlines, file anything that needs filing. The checklist is 5 to 7 items. You do it every week at the same time. It becomes a rhythm, not a panic response.
For taxes specifically, I'd add a monthly check. Just a 5-minute scan to make sure you're setting aside enough, that your records are in order, that you're not going to get a nasty surprise. Small, frequent doses make tax stuff boring and routine, instead of terrifying and annual.
All right, we've covered morning, evening, household, and business. What about personal self-care? That's the domain Daniel said is currently suffering.
This is the hardest to systematize because it's the easiest to deprioritize. When Ezra needs something, and a client needs something, and the apartment needs something, your own needs slide to the bottom. And for someone with ADHD, self-care tasks often don't generate enough urgency to break through the executive function barrier until there's a crisis.
Part of the answer is to stop treating self-care as a separate domain and instead bake it into the existing checklists. The evening adult reset includes brush teeth, wash face, go to bed by X time. The morning checklist includes eat something before you leave the house. It's not a separate regimen, it's just part of being a functional human, and it's on the list.
I'd add one thing to the weekly reset, a quick self-check. Am I sleeping enough? Am I eating actual meals? Am I getting any time that isn't work or parenting? If the answer to any of those is no for more than a week, that's a red flag.
We've got our 6 domains. Now the question Daniel actually asked, how do you use this thing? What's the workflow? Because having the checklists is only half the battle. Actually consulting them is the other half.
A checklist you don't look at is just decoration. And for ADHD brains, the out of sight, out of mind. Problem is real. If the checklist is in a drawer or buried in an app, it might as well not exist.
Placement matters enormously. Each checklist lives in the physical location where the actions happen. The morning checklist is on the bedroom door or the bathroom mirror. The kitchen checklist is on the fridge or the cabinet. The evening checklist is wherever you wind down. The business admin checklist is on your desk, literally taped to the monitor.
The weekly reset checklist, where does that live?
I'd put that one in a prominent place too, maybe the fridge or a family command center. but the weekly reset is also a good candidate for a digital reminder because it's a once-a-week thing that's easy to forget. A recurring calendar event with a notification, Saturday morning, weekly reset, check the fridge list.
The paper checklists are the execution layer. The digital calendar is the trigger layer for things that don't have a natural environmental trigger, and the plain text master file is the reference layer. It's where you store the list of go-to meals, the tax calendar, daycare contact info, pediatrician's number, the moving checklist. You don't look at it every day. You consult it when you need to update something or when a situation arises that isn't covered by the daily checklists.
Let's talk about what happens when the system breaks. Because it will break. Daniel and Hannah are going to have days where the morning checklist doesn't get looked at, the groceries don't get done, and dinner is cheese on bread again. What's the recovery protocol?
This is crucial, and it's something most productivity systems get wrong. They assume compliance. They don't have a failure mode. For ADHD, the failure mode is the most important part of the design. Because shame spirals are real. You miss a day, you feel bad, you avoid the system. You miss more days, the system collapses. The recovery protocol has to be no shame, just reset.
At the top of each checklist, I'd put a one-line note. If you're seeing this for the first time in a while, that's fine. It sounds cheesy, but it's a deliberate design choice. It lowers the barrier to re-entry. The system doesn't judge you for falling off. It just invites you back.
The emotional experience of using a productivity system matters. If the system makes you feel like a failure every time you look at it, you'll stop looking at it. And that's another argument for paper over apps. An app can show you a red badge with 53 overdue tasks. That's designed to create urgency, but for ADH. It often creates avoidance. A piece of paper doesn't shame you. It just sits there, patient, waiting for you to come back.
Now, Daniel mentioned the medication as a window concept, using the period of reliable focus to build the skills and systems. How does that connect?
This is where timing matters. If Daniel is on a medication that gives him a window of reliable executive function, say, a few hours in the morning, that's the time to do the system building work. Not the daily execution, but the initial setup. Designing the checklists, printing them, taping them up, creating the plain text file, setting up the calendar reminders. That's cognitively demanding work that benefits from sustained focus. Do it during the window.
Then the daily execution, running through the checklists, ideally becomes automatic enough that it doesn't require that same level of executive function. You front-load the cognitive work so that the daily stuff runs on habit and environmental triggers. There's a concept from behavioral economics called choice architecture. You structure the environment so that the default option is the one you want. If the checklist is on the fridge, the default is checking the list. If the go-to meals are posted in the kitchen, the default is picking from that list instead of staring into the fridge at 6 p.m.
For someone with ADHD, that's especially powerful because it reduces the number of decision points. Every decision point is a potential failure point. Fewer decisions, fewer failures.
There's a trap here, though. The organization work can become a form of procrastination. You can spend the whole medication window tweaking the system instead of doing the actual work the system is supposed to support.
That's a real risk. The perfect checklist that never gets used is worse than a mediocre checklist that actually guides behavior.
My advice? Give yourself a time box for system building. Say, 2 hours total. Design the checklists, print them, tape them up, done. Don't iterate. Don't optimize. The first version will be wrong in ways you can't predict until you use it. Use it for 2 weeks, then tweak. But the tweaking happens during a dedicated review session, not as an ongoing distraction.
That's the agile development approach applied to life systems. Ship a minimum viable product, get feedback from reality, iterate. Daniel's a developer, so that framing will probably resonate.
Let's pull this together. If we were going to hand Daniel a user manual, what would it contain? Page 1, the system overview. A one-paragraph explanation of how the whole thing works so that when it breaks and you need to rebuild, you know the principles. Pages 2 through 7, the 6 domain checklists, each with 3 to 7 items, each with a note at the top about recovery. Page 8, the weekly reset checklist, the one that ties all the other domains together. Page 9, the master reference go-to meals, important contacts, tax deadlines, moving checklist.
The format, pages 2 through 8, are printed on separate sheets, each posted in its relevant location. Page 9 is a plain text file, synced to both parents' phones and computers.
I'd add one more thing, a daily anchor. One thing that happens at the same time every day, no matter what, that serves as the heartbeat of the whole system. For Daniel and Hannah, it might be the evening adult reset, that 15-minute window after Ezra goes down where they run through the evening checklist together.
The anchor keeps the rhythm going even when individual pieces fail. If the morning was chaos and the afternoon was a disaster, the evening reset still happens. It's the reset button.
Doing it together matters. If one person is carrying the mental load of the checklists, it's not sustainable. The system has to be shared. Both parents know where the checklists are, both parents can run through them, both parents can update the master reference. The source of truth only works if it's actually the truth for everyone.
All right, I want to address something deeper, Daniel said. He finds complicated things easy, but struggles with the daily things it takes to be a functional human. That's a really common ADHD experience, and it's not a character flaw. It's a neurological reality.
AD? HD brains are interest-based, not importance-based. If something is novel, challenging, urgent, or personally interesting, it engages the dopamine system and executive function kicks in. Complicated problems are often novel and challenging, so the ADHD brain locks in. But daily maintenance tasks, groceries, laundry, brushing teeth, are none of those things. They're not novel, not challenging, not urgent, until they become a crisis. So the brain doesn't engage. It's not that Daniel doesn't care about eating dinner. It's that the task of ensuring dinner happens doesn't generate the neurochemical conditions for action.
The system has to compensate. It has to make the uninteresting tasks automatic, or at least remove the need for interest by reducing the cognitive load so much that the task doesn't require engagement. You don't need to be interested in checking the fridge checklist. You just need to walk past the fridge and see it.
Reducing friction also helps. If the groceries are delivered instead of requiring a trip to the store, that's less friction. If the go-to meals use ingredients you always have, that's less friction. If the laundry basket is right where you take off your clothes, that's less friction. Every bit of friction you remove is one less thing your brain has to overcome. Daniel mentioned home delivery specifically. If it's in the budget, grocery delivery is one of the highest return investments a new parent with ADHD can make.
In Israel, the grocery delivery infrastructure is actually pretty good. Shufersal, Rami Levy, they all do it. It's not expensive.
There's another dimension here, the emotional side. Daniel described the cheese on bread moment, and his read was, this was preventable. That's an analytical read, which is useful for system design. But there's also an emotional read. I failed at a basic adult task, and that feels bad. For someone with ADHD, those moments accumulate into a narrative of, I can't do simple things, what's wrong with me?
That narrative is self-reinforcing. The worse you feel about your ability to handle daily life, the more you avoid thinking about daily life, the more things fall apart, the worse you feel.
The system also has to function as a kind of emotional prosthetic. It has to externalize the competence so that you don't have to feel competent to get things done. On a bad day, when you feel like you can't do anything right, the checklist still works. You don't have to believe in yourself, you just have to follow the list.
That's almost a philosophical stance. The system doesn't depend on your emotional state. It's there whether you're feeling great or feeling terrible. And that reliability, over time, actually changes the emotional narrative. When you have a stretch of weeks where dinner happens and the apartment is basically functional, and Ezra gets to daycare on time, you start to build evidence that you can do this. The system creates the conditions for competence, and the experience of competence changes how you see yourself.
Let me address one more thing. Daniel mentioned he's tried Google Calendar and Todoist and isn't convinced they make things easier. I want to give a more nuanced take on where digital tools do and don't help.
The problem with Google Calendar and Todoist isn't that they're digital, it's that they're unstructured. They give you a blank canvas and say, organize your life. For someone with ADHD, that's paralyzing. But a shared family calendar with recurring events for the fixed rhythms, daycare drop-off, weekly grocery run, business admin block, that's genuinely useful. It provides the external trigger for things that don't have a natural environmental trigger. And shared is the key word. Both parents can see it. Both parents get notifications.
For task management, the sweet spot is something much simpler than Todoist, a shared reminders app with a very small number of lists. not projects and context and next actions, just this week, this month, and someday. The this week list gets reviewed during the weekly reset and should never have more than about 7 items. If you can't fit the week's priorities into 7 items, you're not prioritizing, you're cataloging.
The point is, digital tools have a role, but they need to be as simple and structured as the paper checklists. The tool should do the organizing for you, not ask you to do the organizing inside the tool.
All right, let's do the temperature check. If Daniel implements something like this, what's the likely failure mode?
I think the most likely failure mode is that it works for 2 weeks, and then the weekly reset gets skipped 1 week, and then the checklist gets stale, and then the whole thing quietly dies. The weekly reset is the linchpin. If that goes, everything else slowly drifts out of alignment.
How do you protect the weekly reset? It needs to be sacred. Same time every week, no exceptions unless someone's bleeding, and it needs to be short, 20 minutes max. If it's an hour-long ordeal, it won't survive.
I'd also say pair it with something pleasant. Do it with coffee on a Saturday morning. Make it a ritual, not a chore. The checklists get reviewed, the meal plan gets sketched out, the grocery order goes in, and then you've earned your weekend.
The other failure mode is checklist creep. Over time, you add items. The 3-7 item checklist becomes a 20 item checklist, and suddenly it's overwhelming again. You need a hard rule. If you add something, you remove something. The checklist has a fixed capacity.
That forces prioritization. If you want to add clean the bathroom, what are you willing to remove? If the answer is nothing, then maybe clean the bathroom lives in the master reference under occasional tasks.
One more failure mode. The system works for one parent but not the other. The checklists become a source of friction instead of a shared tool. The fix is to design the system together, review it together, and be willing to adapt it to both people's needs. If Hannah hates paper checklists and wants digital, maybe the kitchen checklist is a shared note on her phone. The principle matters more than the format.
The system has to serve both of them, not just the person who's more into systems.
Let's summarize the user manual. 1. 6 domains, each with a short checklist of non-negotiable minimums. 2. Checklists are posted in the physical location where the actions happen. 3. A weekly reset that reviews everything and restocks the system. 4. A plain text master reference for long-term information. 5. A shared digital calendar for time-based triggers. 6. A recovery protocol that says, start here, no shame. 7. Protect the weekly reset like it's a medical appointment. 8. Fixed capacity, no adding without subtracting.
That's a solid manual. And I think it answers the question Daniel was really asking, which isn't, how do I get more organized, but how do I stop the daily stuff from consuming all my mental bandwidth so I can be present for my family and my work?
The goal isn't to have a perfect system. The goal is to have a system that's good enough that you don't have to think about it. The mental bandwidth you free up is the real prize.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the Byzantine court, the emperor's silentiaries were officials whose sole job was to enforce absolute silence during imperial ceremonies. Any breach of the prescribed silence was considered not just a breach of etiquette, but a potential political threat, because noise could mask the approach of an assassin. By the 1970s, a team of archaeologists excavating a Byzantine site in Patagonia, yes, Patagonia, found what appeared to be a ceremonial chamber with acoustic properties so precise that a whisper at one end could be heard clearly at the other, while footsteps in the center were completely deadened. The working theory is that the room was designed to make any unauthorized movement acoustically invisible to the emperor while amplifying the slightest conspiratorial whisper, turning silence itself into a surveillance system.
I have so many questions about Byzantines in Patagonia, and I suspect I'll never get answers to any of them.
That was deeply unsettling.
For anyone listening who's in a similar situation, new parent, ADHD, brain, life getting more complex than your old systems can handle. The core question is, what's the smallest thing you can put in place this week that would prevent one of your recurring failures? A checklist on the fridge, a recurring grocery delivery, a shared calendar. The system doesn't need to be perfect. It just needs to be slightly better than what you're doing now.
If you build it during the window when you have focus, the daily stuff gets easier even when the focus isn't there. That's the whole game.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. You can find us at My Weird Prompts.
If you got something useful out of this, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps other people find the show.
We'll be back soon.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show. My weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore. A thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.